tentamos fazer isso.
Não faz pergunta difícil, tá? Porque às vezes tu faz cada pergunta, eu fico...
Tá bom, então, bem-vindo para esse episódio de Aussie English, o podcast maravilhoso para toda pessoa que quer aprender o inglês australiano. Vamos fazer em inglês?
Vamos fazer em inglês.
Alright, sorry guys, we got a little carried away. I'm trying to cheer my wife up here. She's a bit underwhelmed with the prospect of doing a podcast with me, though it's been too long, Kelly.
It's been too long and...
It's been way too long.
It's been too long too. I'm just tired, so...
She's a tired girl. Why would you be tired, Kel? What have you been up to that would make you so...
Because I have a toddler and I'm 7 months pregnant.
Oh, man, there's a lot to cover. Well, before we get into that, before we get into the meat of today's content...
Into the meat.
I thought, can you say that in Portuguese? Vamos nessa carne.
No, we wouldn't say that.
So, before we get into that, I thought that I would say that I got Kel on here today in order to get her to recap 2020 that we've had. Like, obviously, we're not going to get too deep into COVID and everything else. I mean, we can mention it peripherally on the periphery, but it was mainly to kind of just let people get a bit of a look-see into our lives and what we've been up to this year and the wins, the fails, and everything in between. So, Kelly, how has or was your 2020? I guess has been. It can't be now. It's the 2nd of January.
Day 2.
2021.
I think we were very fortunate to be safe and healthy. So, that's something I'm really grateful for because I'm talking about COVID here. Mm-hmm. Like, no one we know got COVID, right?
And well, one of my friend's fathers died from it.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, close relatives and
yes, at least friend. In the near proximity, none of the closest family and friends that we have got it. And I mean, at least here in Australia, people like Christian from Kangaroo English got it. I'm pretty sure Adriana from English with Adriana's husband got it. I'm not sure if she got it, but they're living in Europe. And obviously, it's a lot worse there.
And my family in Brazil, although against all the odds, no one got sick yet.
It's a knock on wood.
Knock on wood. So, that's something that really makes me realize how fortunate we are because no one got sick and thankfully no one died and we're all fine and well.
Chuck the headphones on so that you can hear yourself. Just notice that Kel doesn't have the headphones on.
Oh,
okay. It sounds so much better. You can hear my voice right in your ears as if you're listening to this podcast.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Yeah, good.
Can you hear yourself?
Yeah.
All right, sorry, continue. No friends got it. You feel really fortunate.
I feel really, really lucky. But yeah, it was a crazy year, I think.
Well, let's sort of start from the start. I guess the bushfires kind of happened here in Australia in obviously earlier than January 2020, but starting in 2020, January, that was where we were at. There were sort of bushfires happening. Noah would have been 7 months old at that point in January. So, that would have been-
Yes,
we were dealing with a little baby crawling around all over the place. He wasn't walking. He wasn't talking.
Crazy, hey.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why as well, I thought it'd be cool to have you on to talk about his progression- Your progression with now being 7 months pregnant. Man, there's loads to talk about.
I just
our languages.
It's hard to because right now it feels that he's been always walking. Like I honestly forget. It's like in January he was 7 months old, around 7 months old, and it just feels that he's been a toddler for ages and he walks and talks and you know, it's not like we remember much of him as a little baby, unable to do most things. Right now, it's like we're used to him being cheeky and running and
pretty independent in terms of feeding himself, running around, talking, interacting.
And just his learning capacities and like how much he like gets from every single interaction he has with other people. Like we might say a word today, mentioned something, not even talking to him. And then a few days later, he'll repeat that and say now he's saying blue. Because I remember a few days ago, your mom was trying to teach him the colors. And I'm like, that's crazy. It's crazy to look back and be like, He was tiny, and it all happened within, what, a year?
Well, we had our friends stay for New Year's. These are other Brazilians with two children. One of my students, Alida, and her husband, Renato. Mm-hmm. So, hello, Alida and Renato, if you guys are listening to this. Thank you for coming down and spending New Year's with us and hanging out with your kids. But I think Renato was saying to me at one point, or I think you were there, that he was saying the days are long, but the years are short.
Yes.
With small children, at least. And so, it was a good analogy for what we're experiencing, where it seems like every single day is like a real drain, more so for you than me, because you're doing the lion's share of taking care of Noah during the day. And but the year seems to be going fast. I mean, we had him the other day, it feels like. Feels like we were at the hospital the other day, and that was a year and a half ago.
I know.
And you see photos of us, and you and I haven't really changed in the year and a half.
No.
But he's gone through huge changes, right? Like, he's gone through massive changes.
He's different, and he's just changing every day. I realize it is one of those moments where you have this, like, wow, it's been so long. Like, I caught up with my student midwife, because she's, again, following us. Like,
this is Shani.
Shani, yeah.
So, do you want to explain what happened with Shani and how she kind of fit in with your first pregnancy?
So, she is studying to become a nurse, a midwife. So, as part of her studies, she has to follow a certain number of pregnant women. When I say follow, like, she doesn't come here. But, like, when I have appointments, she tries to-
She follows you down the street.
She follows me everywhere.
No, she keeps track of what you're doing and what you're up to with your pregnancy.
She goes to the appointment with us and ultrasounds, and she takes notes. And fortunately, she was there for the birth when Noah was born, which was really, it was really nice for her, I imagine, to be able to, you know, participate. And
when she kind of needs experience points, right?
So,
you know, at the moment, you're on your L plates trying to learn to drive. Yeah. She was on the sort of analogous L plates for being a nurse, where she needs to follow a certain number of births or pregnancies through to birth.
But the funny, I might be saying rubbish, but I don't think she actually planned to be there for his birth. Like, it was something, she went to see me, as, you know, we got along, and she became a friend, and she went to see us. And then a few hours later, I was, you know, ready to push, and she was like, I guess I'm staying.
Mm-hmm.
And they allowed her to stay. I don't know how the things work in a hospital, but I imagine she didn't actually plan to be there for the moment, for when he was actually being born. But then now she's with us again, because we kept in touch. Like, we would always, like, exchange messages and things. And then I told her I'm pregnant again, and she was like, you know what? I need another pregnant woman. And I was like, man,
I got some spots available.
If it's going to benefit you, would be, you know, very happy to have you with us again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just had an appointment the other day. And then I was just saying, it was one of those moments where you're just like, wow, it's been almost 2 years since I last, you know, saw you, and I was with you and doing all those things. Maybe
time
not the
flies,
last.
Time flies.
But it's just so crazy. But with Noah, it's just different challenges every day. Like, before it would be, oh my God, like a breastfeeding, or, you know, introducing solids and things like that. And now he's like, we actually have to think how we're going to educate him.
And entertain him.
And entertain him. Oh, we can't swear around him. Or, like, we have to be strict with screens, or, you know, we're actually doing what parents do. I kind of feel like more serious, more of an adult now, because we're kind of like discussing all those big issues that every single parent, you know,
what
those
to
questions.
Do with social media and iPhones
social
and all
media
that sort
and
of
things
stuff.
Like, we have to think about all those things, and, like, it's just really mind blowing how quick it goes.
What was it like, I guess, the last year with him, from about 7 months to now 18 months? Compared to what you were imagining it would be like before the fact? Was it what you're expecting?
It's hard to... I don't think I was expecting much in terms of... I was definitely not expecting to be easy. It was probably easier than I thought. But now that I'm over the challenges, most of the challenges we had, it's easy for me to say, oh, yeah, you know, it was a piece of cake. But now we had.
It's funny how we were saying this the other day, yeah, that hindsight is very kind to you.
Yeah.
You kind of forget how hard things were. And then if we talk about specific things, like, I mean, you had mastitis a few times, I think, mm-hmm, didn't you? And how horrible that was. And you can kind of be like, oh, yeah, the breastfeeding wasn't actually mm-hmm that easy. It seems like now that it's over,
yes,
it was a piece of cake. But you're like, well, during that period, it was not fun.
Not at all.
But it's funny. I love, we were talking about this, I love how much the human mind kind of forgets a lot of the horrible stuff that you go through. Yeah. And you kind of, at least you can remember the horrible stuff. But I think with the memories of Noah, at least, and maybe it's a child-related thing where we've evolved to try and see our children in the best light possible.
Yeah.
But we tend to only look back and see all of the happy and fun things that mm-hmm happen with him. You don't really look back and think, oh, my God, it was so horrible.
Well, you remember the feeling. Like, I yeah remember being awake at night with him and first time he got sick and everything. So, but I don't remember the specifics, like the details yeah of, like, there was one day that I really struggled.
Well, you remember you were tired. You just don't yes remember how tired.
How
tired, right?
Exactly. But, yeah, I think we had a very, very difficult phase with him for probably for, like, 3 months. He was just not himself. Like, he was changing a lot. And I think the child brain needs some time to adjust. I don't know. But it was one of those developmental leaps that children go through. And it was really hard. He was just discovering his ability to say no. Mm-hmm. And like, he was discovering that if he cries and he, you know, throws a tantrum, we'll be upset or like distressed. I get really distressed. So it was really hard and he wouldn't sleep to the point I had to get a sleep consultant
mm-hmm
to help me out. And yeah, but that's the main thing I remember from when he was little at the beginning of the year to now. But there is so much, the positives are so great as well. Like I'd seen him, he couldn't walk, you know, and now he runs.
Yeah. Well,
it's,
I think that
crazy.
I had that mind blowing moment when I took him out to the oval nearby and we were chasing a soccer ball around mm-hmm and I had never seen him kick the ball. We'd always been trying to encourage him to say, you know, shoot the. But he always just picked it up, if anything, yeah, and would just drop it. You know, he couldn't even really throw at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then when we took him to the oval that day, he suddenly something clicked and he was effectively just running at the ball mm-hmm and then worked out that he could keep directing the ball by running at it and kicking it.
I know.
And I remember just thinking, how the hell did he just go from 0 to 100? Mm-hmm. You know, and just work that out. And then ever since, he's been yeah kicking the ball around. And it's been interesting seeing him now favoring his right hand for everything and his yeah left, and his right foot for everything as mm well. I haven't seen him kick with his left foot yet,
no,
but he kicks
doesn't
with his right.
Yeah.
And everything that he throws, he either uses both hands or his right hand.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting seeing him yeah go from, I think at the start of the year, he would have been sort of using both hands and mm-hmm feet equally for things, and now he's. I would almost bet everything that I have that he's right-handed and right-footed.
I think with language, it's really clear how much they develop
mm-hmm
in such a short time.
Well, let's switch on to that then. How has it yeah been raising a bilingual child?
Very frustrating because he does understand. He understands everything.
I think he always understands more than you think, right? That's the
yes
crazy thing, because you'll say something like, today I said, se puoi tirare la linea da mia cabeza, can you mm-hmm take the little comforter off my head?
Mm-hmm.
And he instantly just took it off my yeah head. And yeah I was like, that blows my mind that he
they
can
understand
the grammar and the complexity in that request.
Mm-hmm.
Although afterwards I said, could you put the yeah nanny on your own head, and he put it on my head again. Though I don't know if that was understanding or just like, screw you, Dad.
What blows my mind is he understands everything I say. And if I give him directions, like I ask him to do something, he understands and he can decide not to do it
mm-hmm
or he might just do it. But I think what really, really amazes me is how much he can reproduce from that. Like, I don't know, like just saying the colors and animals and like, and just creating his own little thing. Like, he wouldn't say birds. He says kaka.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complex if we think about it, because he knows that ducks make quack, quack, something like that. But he thinks all the birds are ducks, or all the ducks are, I don't know.
It's all pattern recognition, yes, right?
That's amazing.
Are they onomatopoeias? Are they the words where they sound like how they said? I think that is what it is. An onomatopoeia where it's like, I don't know, you have those sorts of the sounds, like to meow is the verb, the sound that a cat makes that we say in English, meow.
Yeah.
But we say to meow. And so it's interesting that he's kind of getting that from the sound that he heard a duck make when he heard that quack, 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 quack.
Yeah.
And he tried to reproduce it and say, ka, 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 and then just called them ka,
yes,
ka, kas.
Yes. It became his thing. And now he's getting, humor.
Yes.
That's really crazy.
That blew my mind. I think what was he doing the other day? He does this thing, and he's done it for actually quite a few months, right, where he pretends to put something in his mouth.
Yeah, just being cheeky.
He knows, like, if we're outside and he picks up a rock, and he'll put it near his mouth, you know, we'll say, now not bok, not in the mouth, don't put it in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll pull it away from his mouth and then laugh at you.
Yeah.
And then after that, he kind of worked out that he can pick up things that he knows he shouldn't be eating.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll wait for you to look at him, and then he pretends to put them in his mouth.
Yeah.
And just as you're about to say something, pulls them away and starts laughing.
And he even says, that's the most, it's ridiculous. And now, like the taxi thing.
Yeah. We'll tell that story. But I found it funny that he got that humor before we get onto the taxi thing. You think about how complicated humor is as a psychological thing that's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would imagine maybe some animals, like some parrots might get it, the great apes, maybe chimpanzees and gorillas. Maybe dolphins do. They get play, right? They get, there's a lot of animals can play, but humor is another level where you are playing in a way that you know that the other person or the other thing involved is going to enjoy and find it, you know, funny.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine animals doing that. But you're like, how the hell does a 1.5-year-old child innately have the ability to make a joke?
Yeah.
Because it's not like we sit down and teach him every single day. So, do this and then you do that. And because the other person's expecting this, they'll laugh.
Yes.
And so, try and make them laugh. He just did it.
It's not something you can explain or teach. It's
He just gets it.
Yeah.
And I think all children, to some extent, do, right? Where they just do weird things and they laugh and you're like, it's so bizarre to think that a young child who can't even speak yet gets humor, effectively. Yeah,
it's crazy.
But the taxi thing was, we were at my sister's house for a Christmas party with the rest of my mother's family.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was him or if it was Isabel, my niece, who fell over.
No, I think it was him, but
I yelled out, taxi, and it's a kind of a complicated joke, but in Australia, probably the rest of the English-speaking world too, if someone falls over or does something like they trip over, like usually not very seriously, obviously, but they make a sort of stumble or something, you can say taxi, and the reference is that they've drunk too much and they're a little bit drunk, and that they need to get a taxi home and call out the word taxi.
Yeah.
So, taxi, you know, to go home instead of driving themselves. Yeah, it's time to go home. So, he tripped over and I said, taxi, taxi. And then, I don't know if Sarah tripped over or something.
No,
My auntie.
I think he repeated he said taxi and everyone was like, wow, he had never said it until this day. And now, every time he trips over.
Yeah,
or
he falls.
He says it again.
I don't even know if he gets it, but he was saying it when he fell over. Like, he would fall over and then say, oh, taxi. And you're kind of like, oh, God, that's so funny.
It is the best.
He doesn't even know why, but it's so good. Yeah.
I love it. And we had the, there was definitely no intentional. It was more this association, I believe, thing where he sees a pattern and he thinks that's how things work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, during Christmas, I would take him outside and there would be lots of Santa Claus?
Santa Claus, lights and decorations and stuff.
Yeah, but the figure, the old man with the white beard.
Yeah, Santa Claus's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we would see all of them, and I would say, "Oh, Feliz Natal, ho ho ho."
Yeah, happy Merry Christmas, yeah. Ho ho ho. The sound that Santa makes, ho ho ho. Merry Christmas.
And then one day we were in the car. We were at a supermarket or something.
This is so good.
And then there's this old man coming towards our car because his car was parked just on the side
next to it. Yeah,
next to us. And Noah just looks at him and like, ho, ho, ho.
In the background. But not like that. He said it like, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, what? I just couldn't stop laughing. And then it happened again when I was walking with him, and there's this old lady, it wasn't even a man, with white hair, and she didn't have a beard, but she had a very, you know, prominent white hair.
Yeah.
And then he looked at her and he said, ho, ho, ho. And she thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
She stopped and she said, oh, this is cute. And I was actually very embarrassed, but she...
I don't think she got that he was referencing Santa.
Oh, she probably... It was very obvious, but I'm glad she had a sense of humor. And that was actually cute. You know, come on. Yeah. He's just pulling those things out slowly, and it's really interesting to watch that.
Well, bringing it back to the bilingualism, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about how we've been attacking the task of teaching him two languages? Because it's one of those things in English, we have that expression, there's a million ways to skin a cat. I don't know if it's that exactly, but the idea is that you can skin an animal in many, many different ways.
Mm.
You've got many options, and I think it's the same thing with raising bilingual children. You've effectively got those, I think, three main ways of doing it. You only speak the foreign language at home, and he gets exposure to the native language outside the house, or the language of the country, which is what we're effectively doing.
Yeah.
You have the one where you have one parent, the native language of each parent is what that parent speaks to the child. So, it would be as if you were speaking just Portuguese and I was speaking English to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the periodic sort of stuff where you can either do it geographically. When we're at home, we speak this language. When we're outside, we speak that language, no matter who's there or whatever. Or each day, we change which language we're speaking. Okay. So, there's many different ways of doing it, but we decided to stick with just speaking Portuguese at home. It's a Portuguese house, and then outside of the house, at least with other people, when there are English speakers there who don't speak Portuguese, we just speak in English. Although, I tend to just speak Portuguese to both you and him anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Habit.
Yeah, I do the same. Yeah, it's been hard because I don't think at this stage we can devise a plan, like, oh, let's do it like very in a very organized way. I don't know, I just find that he's a bit young yet, and we just did the one language at home thing, which is much easier for both of us.
Well, and it was a bit selfish too, because I was pretty keen to continue learning Portuguese, and so if I was speaking English the entire time at home with him and only ever speaking Portuguese with you when I had time, he would probably end up learning more English and less Portuguese, and I would end up learning less Portuguese. So, I felt like it wasn't really a bonus. It would have been what we chose to do, I reckon, if we were living in Brazil.
Yes.
Or we would have just had English at home.
Honestly, I think it would be a bit confusing for me to do that.
To do what?
To speak, you speak English, I speak Portuguese, because I keep like switching
back and forth.
Yeah. But anyway, I was just going to say that I said before, he understands everything. Doesn't matter if we speak to him in English or if we speak to him in Portuguese, but he says much more in English than in Portuguese.
Well, and we've discovered that's partly because a lot of the words he wants to say are easier in English when they're on their own.
Like today, he was saying mice, like more, a lot.
Not like the animal in English. In Portuguese, mice is like mice. More.
That's something that's only, like, the last few days, he's actually, you know, he's sticking to it. Like, I know when he's had something he wants more, he'll say mice. So, now it's consolidated, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, he just speaks English because they're shorter words and they're much easier to pronounce, I think. I don't know.
Well, the crucial example, probably one of the first words he started saying was up.
Up.
So he wanted you to pick him up. He wanted to get up in his chair. He wanted to get on the bed. And up is a lot easier to say than para cima.
Yes.
Which is in terms of just syllables, right? Yeah. You got one syllable versus four.
Yeah.
And it was the same with down, right?
Down. Para baixo. He even says up when he's going down anyways.
Yeah, he just means, yeah, it's so funny. And the other thing we noticed we should mention is his action word, Edgar.
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 Yeah.
So we didn't know who Edgar was for a really long time, but we got it. So he would just for a long time just point and say Edgar or Unga.
Unga. And now it's more like Unga.
Unga. Yeah, it kind of morphed, didn't it?
But
the funny thing was that it was this kind of like utilitarian use of language where he just had this word that he would say when he wanted something to be done.
Yeah.
So, and he would point. So, if he wanted to get up on something, he would say, Unga, Unga, Ega, Ega, and point at like at the top of the couch.
Mm-hmm.
If he wanted some water, he would point to his water and say, Unga, 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 and you would just give it to him. And I remember we were chatting with my folks about like, why is he still doing this? You know, like he understands when I say, do you want water? Do you want food? And my parents were like, well, it works. It's not like it's not working for him. All he has to do is go Unga Unga and you fix whatever the problem is that he wants solved. If he wants his toy, he just points at it and says Unga and you give it to him. So, it became this like action word.
Yeah.
Make this happen. Do this.
It was very cute at the beginning, but then it became really annoying because he would just keep repeating it. Edgar. It was just really hard to even understand what he actually wanted because
well, quite often you thought it was agua.
Yeah, initially it was agua. Now agua became apu.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But now, I feel like because his vocabulary is expanding and he's learning words, Edgar is a bit like he doesn't use it as much.
No.
It's just like I actually don't hear him saying Edgar at all.
Recently.
Sometimes he does, but he would just bubble and say something like, I don't know, apu de agua. But yeah, it's hard. It's been hard. Like, it for me, like, it's a bit frustrating because I really want him. I'm not saying that he's not going to speak Portuguese or he's not learning. He's definitely getting it.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I just think it's easier for him to say words in English.
What we should probably mention too is the luxury that we have of my parents living 100 meters away.
Yeah.
And so, he literally sees them every single day.
Pretty much.
And my sister lives about 150 meters away. And so, he probably sees her, what,
every second day. Yeah.
And so, every single time he leaves the house, he hears and sees and, you know, people speaking English.
And he also started going to daycare.
Yeah.
Which is like definitely an English speaking environment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And all the children that speak in English. And that's what I think has reinforced his...
Well, and that's it. We forget how much he, I would imagine, has many, many more interactions with other human beings in English. And it's pretty much just with us that we speak this other weird language, even if it is the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And so, it is a sort of safe bet on his behalf to be using English because the majority of the people he's going to encounter will be English speakers. But what's the sort of plan of attack with trying to maintain the Portuguese, if you want to talk a bit about that?
I personally don't have one. My idea is like, well, what I think we agreed on is like, we keep speaking to him in Portuguese and keep encouraging him to have Brazilian friends or, you know, Portuguese speaking friends.
I think the biggest thing that we've learned from the interactions we've had with other Brazilians and other foreigners who've come to Australia and moved here, become Australians, but then used or tried to maintain a language at home that's not English with their kids, is that you have to make it fun and you have to show its utility in that you show other people using it. You show you interact with other families, with other children, and so it doesn't become this lame, dorky, weird
that
thing
doesn't take him anywhere.
Or that you just do with your parents when you go home, right? And and when you go home, your parents force you to do it, and so it becomes a double-edged blade where the negativity is reinforced. Not only do I only do it with these people who I'm embarrassed to do it with, but they make me do it. And so we have to try and find ways of interacting with other, the Brazilian community, other Brazilian families, other Brazilian children, and show that, you know, there are other children using this. It can be fun, because the important thing is not really just to get him to speak another language for the sake of it, but to be able to communicate with his family in Brazil.
That's the main thing. Yeah. The main thing, right? I wouldn't be so, interested in him speaking Portuguese right now, or at least been learning from such a young age, if it wasn't because we have part of his family speaks only Portuguese.
50%, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, and vice versa, 50% don't speak Portuguese effectively.
So, yeah, we just have to keep trying, I think. And the good thing is he understands.
Yeah.
He's getting it. It's like, it's there. It's in his brain.
It would be amazing to know whether or not he is aware of them being two different languages.
I don't think he is.
No, well, whether consciously or subconsciously. Like, I imagine that there's a point to which you get where you suddenly know you need to put together phrases that are just using one language. And so, it becomes sort of purified. Whereas, at the moment, he kind of spouts out words and they switch from one language to another. So, I'm not sure if he sort of sees it as a soup and just picks out what he needs when he needs it, especially because my parents speak sort of very basic Portuguese they get from us.
Yeah.
So, they know if he says agua, he wants water, or if he says pão, he wants bread, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see when the grammar starts kicking in and he starts stringing together sentences to what level he starts introducing Portuguese words into English or vice versa.
Yeah.
I just find it fascinating.
Yeah.
I think it'll sort itself out.
I think so, too.
We just have to be open to adapting to whatever comes, I think.
Yeah, it is fascinating. It is interesting. He's just started putting, like, two words together, like, literally.
Thank you.
Only a few times, like, he's done that.
Hi there.
Hi there. Very, very.
Hi there. Hi there.
Very occasionally, he says, yes, please.
He says bye-bye.
He says bye-bye.
That's almost technically two words.
Yeah. He says yes, yes. Yeah, it's very cute. It's very, as a parent, it's beautiful to see. I think that's why people have children. I don't know. Just to see a human being developing in them. Yeah.
It's definitely the best part
of
it.
It's beautiful.
That you get to
makes you forget all the.
Well, yeah. Just seeing him see everything through his eyes. That's sort of for the first, like, he hasn't seen an elephant yet.
I know.
He hasn't seen a giraffe. He hasn't seen a whale.
And every time he goes to the beach, it's like mind-blowing, the best experience he's ever had.
Yeah, he loses
because
it.
Because he loves
it. And you remember, you think he's only been to the beach, quite a bit now.
Yeah.
But when he first went, you're like, this is the first time he's ever put his feet in water with sand underneath them. And you're just like, you forget, you take that for granted, all of those sorts of things. You know, he hasn't seen a Ferrari. He hasn't gone scuba diving. Like, there are all these things that he still has no idea. His world is still so tiny.
Yeah.
And literally a few houses that he goes to on a regular basis and a few places outside the house. And you're like, it's crazy that even those things keep blowing his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that the thing you realize is how much he hasn't experienced true evil or nastiness or horribleness yet, right? Like, you take him out into the world and he thinks everyone is amazing, like his best friend. He'll just walk up to people and be like, hi there.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, as much as I feel like that's somewhat dangerous, you're kind of like, I want to foster that at the same time for as long as possible. I want him to be a positive person.
Old monthly, that's our job, to keep them innocent and, like, just not naive, but, like, just
enjoying the innocence for as long as
safe
possible.
Safe and, like, just let them be children as long as you can, because that's
it ends.
It ends, and it crushes you, and, like, it's awful. And we there was something that it was very clear that I had never thought I would experience that. Like, we just saw jealousy developing in him from one day. Like, he was fine with whoever was touching his toys, and he wouldn't snatch things from, like, trying to grab things from other kids or anything. And then he just started doing it.
It's interesting how these more complicated emotions come out.
Yeah.
So, like, that he initially he had, effectively distraught, like not just unhappy, but like the most angry that you could ever be. And then on the other end, it would be the happiest you could ever be. And he would just have these kind of like two extremes. So, when you're playing games, you know, peekaboo would blow his mind, right? And then, if he didn't get the snack he wanted, it would be like you killed his mother in front of him. Yeah, you just- he'd lose it. But then, these other things like humor start to come out and you know, frustration, anger- and
frustration's
then jealousy.
A big one.
Yeah.
Because he, when he can't, today, I don't know, like, I was trying to put the little boxes, the whiskey thing.
We have an advent calendar that has like 24 different
it's
boxes
like a little,
in it. Like a little shelf with boxes.
Yeah. And he was trying to put them back and he,
inside the,
he wasn't quite getting it. And he got so frustrated.
He just smashes it.
He wanted to do it. It's like frustration because I want to do this thing. I know how it works. But I can't manage my hand to work. It's just
nor my emotions.
Yes. So, but jealousy was a big one for me because I saw him. The sense of this is mine developing in him. Like, this is my toy. I don't want you to play with it. Or even like, oh, you're playing with this thing that I want. I'll just get it from you.
What became that thing, right? Yeah. We would have children over about his age, and it would be a, what toy can I play with out of the box?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like I made that joke of, oh, whatever you want, just not that one.
Yeah.
Or that one.
Or whatever
or that
you
one.
Touch.
Yeah.
Right now, because the girls, Amanda and Mia were here for during the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Not the weekend, the last few days.
Yep.
It was a bit like I saw him doing that a few times, but at the same time, it was more like he wanted our attention.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much about the toys. It was like, oh, you're talking to this person. I'm going to whinge. Today, I was trying to, was it yesterday? I was trying to talk to my friends who came here to say, to see us. And he would not shut up because I wasn't looking at him. I was just like having a conversation with two other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all, now it's not so much about, I want this thing. It happens. But it's like if we are giving someone else the attention he thinks should be going towards him, he loses it.
Well, ironically, so one, he probably doesn't know very different, right? So he's so used to getting 100% of our attention. But evolutionarily, as the evolutionary biologist here, that is a very, very good way of getting more knowledge effectively from his part, right? So if he can do whatever it takes to get more attention, he's going to learn from that and have a better chance at survival.
Yeah.
And so, there's a big thing. That's why babies cry, right?
Yeah.
And that's why babies whinge. And that's why, you know, they a lot of this behavior, it's all related to effectively them getting as much of your attention and resources as possible for their own benefit.
Which I believe, and I truly believe that it's not, they're not trying to manipulate you. Like, they're not, at least not at this age. I don't think Noah is like.
Sorry, I'm just opening some whiskeys. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a bit.
I don't think Noah is actually doing that. I think it's a necessity from a very dependent being as he is to get his parents' attention all the time. And like, when I'm not in the room, he's mostly fine. And I come back and he just like, this is my person. This is my woman. I will not let you chat to her.
Well, but even with me,
sense.
Even when I hang out with him, he's always like, mama, 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 where's mom? Where's mom?
And oh my God, like, it's hard enough for me to hear, to listen to him crying. Even when I know he's fed, he is not hot, he's not cold, he's fine. And I've done everything to make him comfortable because I don't, there's a lot of necessities you can, fulfill, but like there is also the necessity of being close to the person you feel the safest with.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important thing. But when I've done all that and I've given him as many cuddles as I can, he keeps crying. But now he's saying mama when he cries.
That's the most brutal thing I've
horrible.
Seen your reaction.
It's
when he's
awful.
Upset and he's caught and you can just hear through the door.
It actually tears my muscle. It, like, actually, it's a very organic, like, physical reaction for me. Cause
well, even I react and he's
awful.
Not screaming my name, so I can't imagine.
Awful.
When we were learning about that again to sort of get into the biology side of it, that the primary caregiver, which is obviously usually the woman, but apparently the study showed that it's not just women. If you've got a gay couple or if a stay-at-home dad, it ends up happening to him too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we were learning that the amygdala, that part of the brain, enlarges in the primary caregiver, and as a result, you have a lot more empathy towards your child, probably children in general, but your child specifically, because obviously it's a big benefit to your child's survival if you're much more sensitive to any time he or she is in distress.
Yeah, it is. It does give you this, I mean, I'm sure all the moms of, you know, as you said, stay-at-home dads or whoever is the primary caregiver of a child, I'm sure people can relate to that. It's really real. It's like a physical reaction that I can't stand this. I have to go there. So sometimes, you know, in order to keep his routine or, you know, educate him, or you have to say no a few times and you have to stop him from doing things, and just the crying and like getting around the fact that, you know, he's just whining. He just wants something that he's not supposed to have. And yet you have to be firm. It's really hard. So it's a mental sort of
battle.
Exercise. Yeah, you do every day, at least as a mother.
Well, I always feel bad because I give the tough love sort of thing where I'm like, he can suck it up. You know, he'll deal with it. And you're always like, no, he won't. And there has to be that kind of balance, I guess, between the two sides of it. Yeah. Anyway, we should probably move on. We've been chatting about bilingual children. We were meant to be chatting about 2020. What else has happened this year?
Schwiskies. You got obsessed. We have a new obsession.
We or I?
You. So, sorry.
You got dragged into it one way or another.
You have a new obsession. It happens a few times throughout the year. Peter develops a hobby.
What was the one before this?
Photography.
I'm still obsessed. I just don't have much time currently.
You like it.
Yeah.
But I think you've done everything you wanted. I think at least in terms of like you tried new cameras and you got really into it. And there was a time we would go out to take photos almost every day.
Yeah.
At least when we were in Canberra.
I think it probably pairs pretty well with lockdown and COVID as well because we couldn't just go out and move around.
Yeah.
And I think as well, so the thing, what happened was I started a diet. I started the keto diet, the ketosis diet, where you don't have any carbs effectively. Where you're very, very limited amount of carbohydrates in your diet so that you don't spike your insulin. And as a result of spiking your insulin, you store fat.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing that, you eat more fats and you end up not storing much fat and burning the fat that you've got. At least that's the basic idea. When I was doing that, I was like, I can't drink beer. And I can't drink wine, and I can't drink, you know, soft drinks that aren't diet soft drinks. And I was like, well, you know, my parents quite often get together or we have parties where I would like to have an alcoholic beverage of some kind. Mm-hmm. What can I have? And then I thought about whiskey, and then it just ended up becoming a going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sort of thing, and getting obsessed with it. And it's just sort of kept going. And I guess it's because it's a sort of an easy thing that you can do from home. You can obviously buy the stuff online. You can have it arrive at home. You can drink it at home. And the other thing that I found that I loved about it was the social aspect of it. I mean, I don't really drink very much on my own. I'm drinking with you now. I've poured two drams, we call it, these two little glasses of some Talisker 18 and Balvenie The Week of Pete, 14-year-old, if you guys want to know. But usually, I don't do it by myself. I'll do it when it's a social thing. And I really enjoy it because quite often, it's a not just drink to get drunk kind of thing at all. It's more, I've got four different whiskeys. Let's whip those out and compare them to one another. And this is, Kel's found really funny. You can tell the story.
No, I just find it because I'm not into it. And then from the outside, it sounds like you're just being really-
wankers.
Really weird.
Pretentious idiots.
Yeah, just like very fancy sort of, this one tastes like-
Well, I guess a big
toast
interesting-
Toast with Vegemite or like, it's just
the
really-
The interesting part about having whiskeys when you get into the deeper end of sampling different kinds of whiskeys and just drinking a little bit of each one at a time as opposed to just doing shots of a drink is- And with the glasses that you get here- It's a big sensory experience that you kind of have. And the interesting thing that you can do with it, because whiskies are made in so many different ways and are so many different ages and are so different from one another, you can get so much out of them in different ways. So, you'll smell different things, you'll taste different things.
Yeah.
And so, the interesting thing, the thing that I think gets me off the most is mm-hmm. hanging out with multiple other people who are drinking the same whiskies, and then you compare what you're getting out of each one.
Yeah.
And so, you kind of like, okay, this one I'm getting dried apples, dried burnt apples,
mm.
and, you know, some kind of salt water, dry seaweed smell. And the other person, the funny thing is when you both lock on to one thing.
Yeah,
so
it's interesting.
Hanato was over the other day and he was trying one of the Brokladic whiskies that I've got. And he said, man, this smells so much like green olives. And I remember as soon as he said that, I was like, man, I'm totally getting that as well. I can totally smell those pickled green yeah. olives. So, I don't know. It became a very fascinating thing, and then I obviously took it the next step doing what
I think what I mean from again from the outside, I think the complexity around making whiskey is something that attracts you as well. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like, you know, there's a lot into it, much more than someone like me who doesn't know anything about whiskey would suggest. But there's a lot into it. So I think the process is something that fascinates you as well.
I think the cerebral side of it. So, yeah. I like the problem solving and the learning from scratch a new thing, like with photography as well. You know, it's yeah. kind of endless. You can do all kinds of different photography.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for you to do. You can go to the same place 1,000 times and it's different every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the same sort of analogous thing there would be like comparing the whiskies with one another, taking two photographers to a single location and comparing the yeah. photos they took. Mm-hmm. So, I definitely was keen, and that's why I started with the Whiskery, the Bellarine Distillery.
Where we got married.
Yeah, where we got married, under yeah. the tree there. I started volunteering just to see if I could come along when they were distilling whiskey because mm-hmm. I wanted to see the process in the flesh. And they were like, we need someone to work part-time. So, I ended up working there 3 days a week or 2 days yeah, a week from 9 to 12 in the morning.
Mm.
Which is- how have you found that? You can be honest.
Oh, why wouldn't I? No, initially, uh-oh. I was really on the fence about it. Like, mm-hmm. I obviously wanted you to go and have this hobby and that make some more money and socialize, because I know that is something I really yeah. need to work on for myself.
Yeah.
It's hard when you have a child.
But you don't appreciate just how important
yeah.
seeing other people. And again, this is one of those things that's come out of COVID mm-hmm. and the lockdown situation, and that not just that you're a new mother and I'm a new father and that we're inside mm-hmm. with a small child anyway, but the fact that you are also prevented from going yeah. outside and seeing many people.
There are other things, like we live a bit far from Melbourne mm-hmm. where most people we know live. All those things. So, I was happy for you, but then on the other hand, I was also like, wow, there'll be days I'll be by myself here.
Yeah.
And I can't just knock on your door and expect you to drive me somewhere or to do this for Noah, to be with him for 20 minutes so I can take a shower. So, I had to get around those things and be like, oh, I can't stop him from doing that. And I'm happy that he is doing that, but I have to digest my feelings as a mother.
And that was the difficult thing relationship-wise, yeah. right? Because we've been navigating, you know, and we can talk about it recently, just fighting quite a bit because yeah. we get stressed out and we get yeah. angry and you know, we can talk about how we sort of manage those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But the same thing, I guess, I realized with wanting to do the whiskey thing was, one, I wanted to be out of your hair and away from you mm. for your sake so that you can kind of get a break and-
mm.
for my sake as well, so that I can kind of be away from you and refresh, because obviously we have the issue of me working from home. So we're in each other's hair constantly.
Yeah. But it's not what I think you felt, but I also feel that it made you, one, appreciate much more how much I do, because I see that on your behavior, like how much you acknowledge it. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, I know you've been doing so much. But it also, I think it made you be more involved in a way.
And that was the kind of
thing. Because you come back home.
Really excited and pumped
and
up.
And you know that well, you spent a whole morning work somewhere else. You still have work to do for Oz English, but you know that you have to spend time with Noah because I was by myself with him and I need a break. So it's kind of like, it doesn't work every day, obviously. Some days we have hiccups and like things happen, but most days, you are fresh and like in a very good mindset. And because now Oz English is growing and everything, you have more people working for you. You can actually have more time to be with Noah.
Yeah.
So it turned out really well. I like when you go and I like when you come back much more because you're like, okay, I can take him for 1 hour or I can do this. And like,
well, it's one of those things where I think you need to set yourself up to kind of miss someone or miss something. Mm. You need time away from whatever that thing is, whether it's a hobby or whether it's your job or whether it's a relationship, people in your life. Quite often, whether, you know, long-term or short-term, there need to be breaks that you have.
Yeah.
Because it refreshes it. And then you feel like every day when I come back from the whiskery at 12 o'clock, I'm dying to see Noah because generally you go out after you've woken up with him and go see my mum, go for a walk, go to the park. Yeah. And so I'll wake up, no one's here. And then I leave and go to work and then come back a few hours later and he's in bed. Usually just started his nap. I pretty much always miss that last little bit before he goes to sleep. And so I won't see him until about 2 o'clock. And although it's kind of like, oh my God, I miss him, and I wish I'd been there the whole time, I really do like seeing him and being pumped and being like, all right, let's go do something, you know, and having that sort of time to refresh.
I think that's why motherhood is so hard. At least I can only speak for myself because you don't get a break. You don't get a break unless you have someone with you that is really willing to be hands-on and like work things out together. And even that, like, even that, I would say the load's much heavier for the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least for me, like, I'm a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't get a break for him. And it's hard. Like, sometimes it's not that I don't love him. It's not that I don't want to be with him or play with him. Sometimes I just don't have the energy.
Yeah. Well, especially because you're 7 months pregnant.
Not only the physical energy, but like the emotional energy to put into our relationship.
Yeah.
I'm not creative. I don't know what else to come up with so he's happy and entertained or like.
But I think we learned that more recently in the last month or two, right? That you don't necessarily need to be putting so much pressure on yourself to keep trying to push the boundaries and find all these new things for him a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, he just needs you to be present. He doesn't need, and this is you in general, you, me, my parents, whoever it is. And he'll make his own games and make his own fun.
Yes.
Now.
But at the same time, he's still so young.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's a bit easier to talk about that if you're talking about a 2-3 year old, like with your niece.
Yeah.
She's happy to play by herself. And she demands attention sometimes. But with Noah, he is in a position now that he'll play for a little bit and then he'll start looking around and, where's mama? And then I felt that he got much more attached to his, comforter, Nanny.
It's like a halfway between a toy and a small cloth.
Yeah.
It's like a cloth with a head on it and some hands on it.
It's just something he carries around
and sucks his thumb and smells it.
Because it gives him the sense of safety and like, this is my safety thing. And he's much more attached to this thing now because we've both been trying to encourage him to play by himself or to do other things, or sometimes we're just busy and like he keeps asking for it, which I think is healthy and fine. But it's just hard because as a mom you don't get a lot of breaks, and then it becomes this thing that because you don't get a break you become resentful and you're really tired.
That's the stuff that I guess I didn't really appreciate before, obviously getting into being a father.
Yeah.
Of just how much you kind of need to negotiate all of these things and how much things just end up happening because you let them happen and you have to, it's so much work. Yeah. Not in a negative way. You just have to realize that like the baby's work, the relationships work, the house is work is work. Like all of it is a lot of work to try and balance and maintain. And you have so many parts moving. I think I finally have an appreciation for what it's like, you know, for parents because before becoming one, you just see these people who are tired and yelling at their kids and you don't realize that the kid's been pushing their buttons for the last 5 hours and that they've just snapped or something.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh my God, what a bad parent. And you're like, dude, they're at the limit.
I have to admit that I was a Karen. Like, well, you know, just nasty comments about, oh, you know, see this couple at the restaurant giving the child an iPad to play with.
You mean
with?
Judgmental of other
judgmental,
parents.
Judgmental, yeah.
Yeah.
Not all the time, obviously, because I'm not a judgmental person.
I think you can't help but be that when you start becoming, when you're pregnant, you're expecting a child, or when you're a young mother and you think, oh, I'm going to do all the right things.
Yeah. Oh, my God. My child will never touch a cell phone. Mm-hmm. But honestly, so every day you're picking your battles. Like, you're just like, what is it that I'll fight for today? Is it the food fight or is it the sleep fight?
Do I want to hold my ground and not show him a cartoon whilst trying to change his nappy and then end up with poo all over the couch and my hands and my knees and him running around with no nappy on? Or do I just want to show him the cartoon, have him lie still and change his damn nappy?
That's it. Every day. Yeah. So, I do appreciate how much.
It's a balance.
It's a balance. Like, you honestly have to go for what's actually important. For me, it's like, he's sleeping fine, he's eating fine, and, you know, he's healthy and fine. If he gets dirty, I couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm.
If he's naked or just on a nappy, I couldn't care less.
You need to tell the story about the huntsman.
Yeah, I don't. You guys probably know I don't like spiders. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I don't really like spiders. I don't actually.
Not really. You don't like anything with more than four legs.
Looking at photos of them, I don't like hearing about them. Or it's just really horrible feeling that I get. And then Noah was trying to
I'm laughing because I know the story that's coming. Yeah. I'm not laughing because Kel has a phobia of spiders.
He was trying to climb on the pram, and because he had his back towards me, like, I wasn't looking at his face, I was looking at his back.
And but as a note, the pram is outside we have collected four prams that we found on the side of the road, effectively, and we need to get rid of a few of them, don't we, Kel?
Yes, definitely.
All outside, two on the front deck and two on the back deck. Please don't come to our house and rob us until we've gotten rid of the bad ones and we put the good one inside.
Please rob the bad ones.
Take the bad ones.
But yeah, he was, and then
this one had been outside on the deck for a week or two.
Yeah. Then and we barely use it because we got it when we thought we were going to Brazil. It's one of those you take to the airport. So
it's a flimsy fold up.
Yeah, it's not
kind of
straight, definitely. No. So it's hard. The thing's going to fall apart when you take it outside. Anyway.
It's not sturdy.
Definitely. So he was trying to get on that. And then he started saying, aranha. He doesn't say the R, but he was saying what in his head means aranha.
Aranha, aranha, spider.
Aranha, aranha. And I was trying to find it. I was like, oh, where is it? Where is it? And then when I got him and turned him towards me, like, so I could see his face, he had crushed this massive spider.
A huntsman.
And not only that, he had pieces in his mouth. He put the thing in his mouth.
And bit it.
Yeah. So the thing died. Didn't beat him or anything, he was absolutely fine. And I just freaked out. I almost shook him. Like, I was so scared.
Well, I heard the aranya, aranya, aranya. And then I heard you kind of not scream, but kind of just make some noise. Yeah. And then I heard him start to cry and crap, what happened?
I scared him, which I regret.
Well, but you're in the moment.
But it was my reaction, because I didn't know if the thing had done something to him or like if he had actually eaten a piece.
For reference, this spider was big as my palm, the palm of my hand. So it was probably the size of Noah, bigger than Noah's hand.
Yeah.
Bigger than his hand.
He just got it. And I was so scared. Like, I was honestly shaking. And then he got scared because my reaction was a bit full on. And it was just like, the thing fell on the deck, and I'm always afraid of spider, but I wasn't. I just wanted to see the thing away from him, and I was checking him, like, looking inside his mouth and everything, his hands, and then the spider was just literally next to me.
Dead.
Dead
as a doornail.
Awful.
I said
awful.
That about it when it had happened to you. I'm like, did you realize the spider was there right near you? Like, I mean, in his mouth and you pulled it out and then on the ground and you were like, I didn't even think about it. I wasn't afraid of it at any point. And I'm like, isn't that interesting how your instincts kind of took over the natural fear that you have of spiders normally and prevented you from freaking out? You know, because you would think normally, oh,
I'll run
if
away.
No one picks up a spider, I'll just bail, you know, but you totally did the opposite.
Absolutely. It was horrible.
it was pretty funny.
It was funny late after.
It was funny after the fact when he was fine and that had happened and was like, that's a pretty Aussie story.
But yeah.
That was pretty badass.
It was cool. But anyway, it was just one of those horrible moments where your child is doing something completely oblivious of any danger and like any sort of hygiene or anything, and you just lose it.
He was probably pissed that he missed out on a meal. He was like, I was gonna eat that. What are you
like
doing?
Some protein. Yeah.
So switching gears and changing the topic before we finish up soon, because I know you need to go to sleep.
What time is it? Let me see. Oh yeah, definitely.
It's 9:30. So, how has it been being pregnant this year through COVID, through lockdown, obviously experiencing the effects of being pregnant and then also having a 1.5-year-old the entire time? Well, he hasn't been 1.5 for the entire time, but you know what I mean, a young child at the same time. And who tricked you into getting pregnant again so soon and why?
Oh my god, it was so well, it wasn't like it didn't trick me. Like we were both
nothing's gonna happen, I promise.
But again, it happened much faster than we thought because with Noah, we talked about it a few times that we pretty much tried for a month.
Less. A month, but I think you were pregnant in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we didn't know because the things we would read about it were like, oh, yeah, no, first time is usually takes 6 to 8 months. And
well, they said something like 80% the first year. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's all. So, it's probably going to take us months. So, we better get at it. Like,
well, and, yeah. You know. And you don't, before you get pregnant or before you have a child, you don't really understand like how fast things can, I don't know. It's just something that you learn that if we do it unprotected, you get pregnant anyway. But then the second time, we were actually on it. Like, you know, let's have a few pregnancy tests at home. And
well, you were anal about it.
Yeah.
You were the one that was on it. I wasn't on it.
I just wanted to know.
I'll buy a box of these tests and I'll just use them few days.
I think I did 5 before I was supposed to get my period and they all came back negative.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is with Noah, 2 weeks before I was supposed to get my period, 2 weeks before the test came positive. So that gave me the feeling that, you know, the thing will show up like
really quickly.
So I just keep doing the test and one day they'll be positive. And then it never came back positive. I was like, oh, you know, we might have to try next month or a couple of weeks because it didn't work.
And I think most people had told us, oh, the second one usually takes longer and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, all right.
And then, honestly, one day before I was to get my period.
You're going
to
tell it like it's some sort of crazy story. Oh, that was the last test in the box and there were no more at the Woolworths store. And it was like, oh, my God, it was raining and it was dark and I was really sad. And then all of a sudden...
And then I did it. I actually handed it to you because
negative.
I told you it was negative. I was like, oh, no. And then I just hear this, oh.
I was like,
Kelly. And then you start laughing. And I'm like, what? What is it? And
what
then
have you done?
It's positive. And you forget what being pregnant feels like. And at the time, I wasn't feeling anything. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm not pregnant. And he was like, yes, you are.
I'm pretty sure the test doesn't come back. It's like COVID, right? The false negatives or the false positives are not common.
Anyway, so pregnant again. COVID-wise, I have to say, I personally didn't feel much. I didn't have any many things to struggle about, like being pregnant during the pandemic because...
Well, we were already sort of in the thick of it.
Yeah. And we live in a very... we didn't have many cases here in Ocean Grove anyway. I wasn't going to Melbourne anymore for school.
That was all online. Yeah. And you finished it. Congrats.
Thank you.
Bridging visa.
Bridging visa. Yeah, hopefully not for long.
So still waiting, guys. We're still waiting. It's been a year or so.
So I didn't actually have any sort of consequences of, like, you know, oh, you're pregnant during the pandemic, and that's how. The only thing, like, you can't go with me to the ultrasound. You can't. Yeah,
you
be
can only
there.
Have one person.
But, you know, it's second pregnancy. We just don't care.
You should tell that story.
Yeah, like, I came back with Joanna is the name we chose for our daughter. And I came back. They usually give you a photo and, like, this little printed thing.
Kill left it in the car.
I left it in the car, or the other day I found it under the couch. It's like.
Well, that's partly because of Noah.
Yeah, we just don't have time to gather all those little things. And
well, and you were the first pregnancy with Noah. You were constantly checking the app on the phone that would tell you how many days
size.
You were,
the
size comparisons. And now you're just like, is she kicking? She's kicking. It's all good.
Yeah. Pretty much.
The interesting thing is that we're ahead of our schedule, aren't we, Kelly?
With regards to
both Noah and Joanna.
Yeah.
So, with Noah, well, I guess we should say, we went to Canberra, obviously, after Kel and I met and we had been together for a month or two. You ended up getting a job in the embassy at Canberra.
Yeah,
we moved there for 6 months.
The whole-
and we were planning to live there for 2 years because that was the maximum amount of time that you could have that job at the embassy. The sort of complexities of it was that unless you had passed that exam in the Brazilian government.
Yeah, Brazilians will understand because it's a public service sort of thing.
So you have to pass this exam to maintain a job for more than 2 years in the public service.
So it was temporary sort of thing, but things didn't work there. And then we decided to come to Ocean Grove and
we were holding out. We were like, okay, we'll do this. We'll stay in Canberra for 2 years. Kel will work here, get this experience. And then if things keep going well, we'll get married and we'll have, you know, we'll think about having children. And it pretty much ended up the opposite of where you ended up getting told that they couldn't pay or renew your visa.
It was just a lot to do with visa stuff and for us to stay in Canberra without having a job, me having a job was quite unfeasible because
it was pointless,
expensive,
really.
Expensive, not away that, from everyone.
Away from everyone was more of the issue. And there was, if there's nothing keeping us there, if I'm working for
working
Aussie
from
English
home,
from home.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Well, although I would love to stay because I had made really good friends there and I still miss them. but at the end of the day, it was like, well, that's not doable.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ocean Grove.
Well, I think we pretty much decided, hey, do you want to have kids earlier then? Seeing as this job's ending and, you know, we have no other plans currently.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided yes. And then that night I was like, well, we should probably get married, right? And you were like, and I was like, well, I guess that's a proposal, right? So, I guess we're engaged. Better change my Facebook status.
It wasn't that, like, overnight sort of thing, but that's
we were talking about it for a few
sequence,
days.
Like, that's how things progressed.
Yeah. But so, we started trying in that September, I think, in Canberra. Came back to Ocean Grove, found out you were pregnant in
October. Feel like the beginning of October.
Got our house in December. And then had Noah in June. And then we ended up having Joanna because of COVID. Ironically, she's going to be
COVID generation.
I don't know if she'll be COVID generation or not. It depends if the vaccine wipes it out worldwide by the time she's born, right?
Well, but
she was conceived during lockdown.
During the pandemic.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure you guys will probably be like, you just had nothing to do during lockdown. But it was more, we were planning to go to Brazil in August this year. And because that fell through for obvious reasons, we were like, well,
if there's nothing else to do.
No. Well, if we don't go now, we can go next year, but we don't want to go whilst you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And if we go next year, we don't want you to go. Yeah, we're not going to get pregnant there. We'll have to wait until we get back. So, it'll be like another year and a half. Noah's probably going to be 3 to 4 years old by the time you get pregnant again. Do we want that gap? Do we want to have moved so far away from having children and then come back into it again.
Yeah.
And so, we ended up just sort of flipping the coin and being like, let's just smash it out now.
Yeah.
And have the second child close to the first child mm-hmm. because of the current situation without
We're
being able
going
to travel.
We're not going to Brazil anyway. Yeah.
And then, when we can travel in the future to Brazil, we'll hopefully have two toddlers.
Yeah.
Well, one toddler and an older one.
Yeah.
So, we're ahead of schedule. High five, Kelly. High five. Woohoo.
So, the trip to Brazil, unfortunately, didn't happen. It will happen, but not soon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got pregnant. I can honestly say that if I had to wait a bit more and think it through, I would probably be like, I'm not getting pregnant again. So, for myself was kind of like, am I going to do this? If I am, I have to do it now.
So, it's kind of like when you go to the swimming pool and you climb up the 10-meter board and you go to the edge and you're like, if I think too much, I'm not going to jump off this. So, I just jump.
Yeah.
That's good. That's how I do it, Kelly. That's how I do those attack those kinds of life-changing events. It's just smash it out. Just do it. And live with the consequences.
For the record, this is my last pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
We have Noah, we're having Joanna. And yes, it's, as you said, it's hard to, as the kids grow up and you somehow find a way, you know, to deal with tantrums and everything and learn so much, but you also move away from, you know, you can sleep a bit more, you can do things a little bit better, and you don't want to go back to that place. That's at least personally, I feel like it's a big ask.
Francis, when you're editing this podcast, can you please edit that section out just so that Kel can't come back and remember this and hold me to it? Thanks, Francis.
So, yeah, anyway, it's been fine. I mean, looking forward to it. I've been, I can't really say I've been enjoying being pregnant because it's hard, like, especially when you already have a child.
What's the upside, right?
Well, yeah, you already have a child, you're tired and fat and you just can't do much and you have to. Whereas with Noah, I was just like, oh, I'll just take a 3-hour nap today and be like...
We had no other real responsibilities,
but
aka another child.
You make it work. And I'm trying to be more positive. That's my New Year's resolution. I'm trying to be more positive and look at things from a different perspective. And I think things will be fine and there'll be hard days and hot nights. And yeah, but everything will be fine.
I think so. Well, and do you want to talk about our current situation?
We have to move again. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what
I mean. Yeah. Yeah. So, I've been here in renting this house for
2 years.
Not because we love this house, to be honest, but because
Jesus, stick the boot in. Like, really give it a kick.
It's convenient. It's close to your parents.
Yes.
It is big. It's a big house.
Mm-hmm.
We have too much crap, so it's hard to imagine that we have to pack everything up and move.
She means actual poo too, because there are a lot of nappies that end up going into the bin. Thanks, Noah.
But then the owners apparently want their son
to move into this house. So, that's the only legal way they can ask us to move out currently because of COVID.
So, now we're trying to find a place that is... We can't afford a massive 5-bedroom house.
Well, we can. Ocean Grove. It's just not somewhere good.
It's not, yeah. But I mean, when I say it afford, it's like it's probably going to be very far.
Yeah.
So we can pay for it. Or if it's really close to where we are, we can't pay for it. Like the one across the road.
Yeah. So, well, like one example, and this is the crazy thing that's happened because it seems like COVID, people are leaving the cities and coming into these towns like Ocean Grove that are away from the cities but within driving distance. The rent and the price of houses has just gone through the roof. And so, there's a 4-bedroom house across the road that's similar to the one we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And for reference, guys, we're paying $450 Australian a week for this house. And the one across the road has just been put on the market yesterday at $650 a week. right? A week, and it doesn't have air conditioning. It's on a small block. It's just ridiculous. And I think they're just trying to really capitalize on the market currently and the fact that people are trying to move down to Ocean Grove. And so, we went to a few inspections. One yesterday on the other side of Geelong, which we only had, what, one other couple that came that we saw.
Well, yeah, at least that we saw.
But today, there were a whole bunch in Ocean Grove. So, I think it's one of those things where we took for granted just how good we had it, where we have it in Ocean Grove, in this house, at the rate we're paying for rent, which is still expensive in the grand scheme of things, but relative to the other houses here now in Ocean Grove, it's going to be hard to find somewhere that's a comparable price.
Yeah. Well, we have to accept that the place will be smaller than this one. I would not
newer though. Newer.
Not so much in terms of being more expensive. It'll be a bit more expensive, but like nothing crazy.
No.
Just that it'll be much
smaller. Not $650 a week.
And it won't be within walking distance from your parents, which is annoying.
And that's the biggest thing.
You know,
we want to find somewhere because Kel doesn't drive currently by herself. Yet. We wanted to find somewhere that she could, you know, have people nearby that she knew, that she could socialize with, especially family who have children around the same age as well that would be able to hang out. And the coolest thing that I think I'll miss is just the fact that both my parents and my sister and her partner just go for walks and you just see them walking past the house all the time and they'll just drop in and say g'day.
And you have dinner together.
And we'll have dinner together spontaneously. They can walk home. They can get drunk and then be like, it's fine, I'll just walk.
Leave the car here. Yeah. Well, if you get the house we saw today, they'll still have, they can't really, you know, it's not within walking distance.
But it's a bit of a hike. It's still probably 3K.
We can still see each other on a, you know, very often. It's only, what, a 10-minute drive? 5-minute drive?
Five.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah. So, probably that's the house we want. Although it's not big enough and there are other things, but that's the house we want. So, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get this one.
Well, and we should probably mention to you guys, you know, if you find yourselves in a similar situation, we were speaking to the real estate agent and I was trying to ascertain from him what we could do to try and better our odds, improve our chances at getting this house. And we ended up just saying, like, we'll offer to pay 6 months' rent up front. We'll get into a 2-year lease. So, you have to kind of try and barter them up, I think, especially when currently the houses are so in demand. And so, they have plenty of options. The supply is not very much, but the demand is high. You have to kind of sweeten the deal. And so, because we've been saving up a bunch of money, I think at the moment, we've got about maybe $20,000 saved for a house deposit because we want to buy our own house. And I've had to sort of work out or say we've decided that we'll have to potentially just offer that up as paying ahead of time for rent and then just start saving again in order to get a house in a good position.
I think you just have to think, what can I offer? What can I, you know, what can I do in order to make my application a bit more competitive and
tasty?
Yeah. Just, you know, just so we stand out and like, we don't know if it's going to work because there were so many people and people know those things and they'll try and maybe someone will offer 12 to pay for a year in advance. So, you know, who knows?
Well, and that's how the price goes up, right, for rent. Yeah. They'll say, I'll pay $10 extra. I'll pay $20, $50 extra a week. And then the entire market goes through the roof.
But I have a feeling we'll get it.
All right. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to cover for 2020? You glad the year's over? Do you think 2021 is going to be massively different?
It didn't
different?
Happen, actually. It was a simulation and we're not now.
No fireworks.
No.
No one was watching the fireworks. So, do we really know that they didn't just play last year's video? Although, there were no crowds. So, I think they didn't.
I'm glad the year, it's gone. And it was so sad for many people. Like, people just lost so much in terms of lives and freedom and other things and money and businesses that had to shut down. It's like, it's really hard.
Well, that's probably a point of saying thank you so much to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the fact that you guys have still been purchasing the courses, purchasing the memberships and supporting Aussie English is allowing us to save for a house to support ourselves, mm-hmm. for Kel to be pregnant and for her not to have to work, for her to be able to stay home and be a full-time carer for Noah and for me.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, mainly for you.
She changes my nappies each day as well.
No, but yeah, I honestly, I feel that we are in a very privileged position that we just have to be grateful because it was such a tough year. I'm glad it's over so we can renew our hopes and just try and hope that 2021 is a bit more, a bit kinder to a lot of us.
Yeah, you guys too. Hopefully, wherever you guys are, whatever situation you're in, I hope that things are going okay and that you guys are making it through all right. Yeah.
And now we have another child on the way and there'll be a new adventure we'll talk about here. And yeah.
Do you want to tell people when Joanna's due?
The end of March. Yes.
The end of March. So, it could happen on your birthday, Kelly.
Could happen anytime now because 28 weeks is when the chances of survival.
28 weeks.
28 weeks is when the chances of survival are considered, you know, okay. So, it's still difficult and awful that you have a child.
Premature baby.
But, yeah, can happen. So, hopefully, she stays inside and cooks for a bit longer and, yeah.
Did you have any New Year's resolutions for 2021? I've gone on a diet. I'll talk about that after you, but you go first. You know that.
No, I think just...
Be kinder to yourself. Be
more positive, definitely.
Fight less with Pete.
Keep working on my mental well-being. Like, you know, I've been doing a lot to get... The right mindset to start my day with the right mindset.
It's such a hard balance having children and doing that because you forget you sort of neglect things like that, like your mental health. You don't think it's too much, you know, making time for yourself, making sure you're okay, checking in with yourself. Those things are easy to put on the back burner and
absolutely,
and, you know, forget about. But
because as long as you're still up and working and getting things done, it's fine. Like your children are fed, like the house is I wouldn't say clean, but, you know, you can still live here, you know, and then you forget, oh, it's been 3 days since I had a shower because that's not my priority when my child's crying so much and I need to work out what's for lunch, you know.
Yeah. And then as soon as he's down, you're like, time to sleep.
Yes. Every single day I plan, I'm going to do so much when he's sleeping.
And then you go to bed.
He doesn't sleep for much and I go to bed straight away.
Which is good. That's probably the most important thing, to be honest, more important than a shower.
But
you can sleep in the shower.
Yeah, true. but I think working on that, like just really putting myself first sometimes and being like, especially now as Noah gets a bit older, he can understand a bit more, you know, he'll be fine if I leave him for a little bit. So, it's easy for me to say, you know how hard it is for me to actually put it into practice. But I'll try and do that this year.
Anything, right? It's like learning English and having a proper routine. It's like going to the gym. It's like me with weight loss. Mm-hmm. You just have to build the habit. You have to keep showing up. You have to keep doing the hard work initially until it becomes routine. And then it's compound interest. It starts taking care of itself and the results start speaking for themselves. But it doesn't just happen because you decide you want it to happen.
Yeah.
You have to take action.
But again, oh my gosh, she's kicking so much.
I know. I keep seeing you grab your stomach. I'm like,
I can actually.
Kicking the crap out of you.
She is. But again, because.
I want out. Let me out. Not yet. You're still cooking.
because we are expecting a child now. I don't actually have many plans apart from let me try and get through these experiences as well as I can. Like, I want to be a good mom. I want to be in a good, you know, mind.
Headspace.
And I want to relax when I can. I want to take care of her as well as I did with Noah. Anyway, that's my main thing. So, I can't say, oh, yeah, I'll take up a new hobby or, you know, it's just not.
I know. And I
feel realistic.
That's been one of those things for me where it's been difficult because I don't like the fact that, you know, I appreciate the fact that I'm kind of running around doing my own thing because I know that I have more spare time than you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not necessarily fair.
Yeah.
and I'm looking forward to when you can.
But yeah, we've been talking about it, like when we can finally drink together.
Kel definitely misses that. She's like, oh my God, wine. Yeah. Oh, red wine.
Red wine. That's it. Anyway.
Kel wants to go to bed.
I do.
But yeah, well.
But tell me about your diets. Like, that's your.
Well, I just said that. So I had, before you bugger off, before you go to bed, I had that resolution with my dad. So my dad's obviously someone that, if you guys have seen the Goss videos, you'll know he suffers with obesity, you know, and needs to lose some weight. And I've definitely understood a bit more about his plight. You know, I admit when I was younger, you know, you kind of don't realize how people become really overweight and how hard it is for them to then lose weight, because you think, oh, well, I'm a 20-year-old going to the gym all the time and I have all this free time to be active and blah, blah, blah. And
it's just a matter of you just but now do you, it.
Well, that's it. And now being a dad and being someone who is perfectly capable potentially of losing all this weight and being much more active, I realize how much it is really difficult to find time. It just becomes a lesser priority because I have a child, because I have a wife, because I have a business that's at home that I don't have to be very active to maintain, but I want to do as much as possible because I have hobbies. So, this year, both he and I have just made that New Year's resolution of eating clean, trying to avoid as much sugar as possible, not having wheat in our diets, not being too strict on things, but at the same time, just maintaining that we're eating clean and trying to be more active. And trying to both, you know, motivate the other as well at the same time.
So, do you have a goal? Like, do you want to lose 5 kilos or?
I don't really care too much about the numbers, to be honest. It's more about the appearance.
Being healthy.
Yeah. I just want my six pack back, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
And I mean,
that's easy then.
It's a shallow thing to say, but I guess it's not really, I don't really give a shit about having a six pack. It's just a, it signifies that you've done a certain amount of the weight loss.
Okay.
If that makes sense. It's kind of a proxy, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like if you're like, I just want to be fluent in English. But it's like, really, do you just care about fluency? No, you care about communication and wanting to be able to have good conversations with people. Fluency is just a proxy. Mm. So, it's more that I would like to be able to see my abs again.
Okay.
And then I'll be like, okay, I know as a result of that, that I will be very healthy and able to move around much better and feel more comfortable in my appearance and everything, and that it'll confidence will come with that.
Yeah.
It becomes one of those things. It's really funny when all of a sudden the t-shirts that you've got just don't fit you anymore and you find yourself gravitating towards one or two of them.
Tell me about it.
But yours is self-imposed. I mean, well, so is mine. But yours will disappear in a hurry and everything will fit again. I can't really just go to the hospital and come back and all my shirts fit.
Well, yeah.
So, hopefully, fingers crossed, give it a few months, but yeah, just trying to- It's one of those things, the stricter you get, I find the harder it is to maintain that in the long run. So, you kind of have to find some comfortable medium that you can maintain. Like with learning English and being like, I'm going to study 8 hours a day.
No.
It's like, that's not necessarily feasible forever.
Yeah.
You have to find some kind of medium that's feasible every single day that you can maintain.
Awesome.
Anyway, thank you guys for hanging out with us. And I'm so glad Kel's come back on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because I don't know when the last one that you were on here
was. No idea.
But probably quite a while ago. Or you may have done some of those episodes about reacting to accents. That was probably the most recent one.
Yeah, that was quite fun.
But people didn't get to hear about you. So, that was why I thought it was important to drag you on.
Cool.
Keep you from bed. Anyway, she knows that it's 10 o'clock.
You keep doing that now.
It's because I'm thinking in Portuguese with the grammar.
But the thing that you use the start of a word
and spoonerisms.
You keep doing that.
I don't know. I'm having strokes. Clearly, my brain's dying. And what do they keep saying? We've got friends called Ralph and Jane, and I kept calling them Jalf and Rain.
Yeah,
spoonerisms. They're called in English, where you take the first syllable or letter of a word, two words usually, a phrase, and you switch them.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for hanging out, guys, and we'll see you next time. Peace.